slow?
No.
I'm trying to find the similarities between action of electrons creating whatever other phenomena it could create, electricity and magnetic field, and electromagnetic field, and something that so far Glenn didn't describe, and you didn't describe, what the heck is that? Well, in one instant, this electron can create electromagnetic field and flow of the electrons create electricity, but the same electron is magnetism, and magnetism is not flow of electron. It is not the propagation of electrons, and it is not the propagation of photons. It's a field. It's a flux. What is that flux?
Can I add a question to that? It's energy. Just energy. E.
Yeah, but what is the flux itself? And Glenn and John and Alan, if you're still there, I know that a certain amount of the magnetic field is made by the action of the electrons. A certain amount of the magnetic field is made by what's going on in the nucleus. In the case of neodymium magnets, which are a very strong magnet, which is dominant? Is it the nuclear magnetic field or the electron magnetic field? Who's doing most of the work, if you happen to know? Glenn first.
Well, keep in mind, when you're talking about the iron itself initially, in other words, neodymium is just a mix of other materials that places iron strategically within it. But it's the iron that's what's key here. And what basically is happening is that if you look at an iron molecule, it can be balanced between protons and electrons. The protons and the neutrons within the nucleus don't really do anything. It's the electrons themselves that start their interreaction in the valence shell of energy. That's what's moving up and down, but in a continuous circle within that material. So those electrons are actually transferring from one energy shell to the next in a very, very nicely configured motion within that material called magnet. And it sets up this shorted circuit that can be modeled as an inductor, a shorted inductor with a current flow inside of it, and those electrons are in motion within that material. But once that field is around the outside, if it's in a vacuum, it's just a field. So it's just energy, an energy field of H around the outside. Pretty cool. K2RIW, KC2, QIQ.
No, you didn't answer my question. Maybe I put it as an example because my wording is insufficient enough to describe myself. Here's the point. If I have a butter and I have a knife, I can spread it on the bread. I can do many things, but it's still going to be a greasy job. But I cannot make air with it that I can breathe. Now, I have electrons. Electrons can make only one action, and we have two different results because of the existence or movement or action of the electrons. One of them is magnetic field that is unspecified so far for me. And the other one is whatever we know about it, electricity, electromagnetic field, whatsoever. That's what I don't understand.
Question on Glenn's point, Dick.
I want to answer your question, Dick.
Okay, Alan. I'm slowly getting the impression that, from what Glenn just told us, that the electrons are making all the magnetic field. In an NMR machine, apparently the magnetic characteristics of the nucleus do come to play. But when it comes to a very strong, steady-state magnetic field of a neodymium magnet, Glenn is leading me to believe that the electrons are doing all the work. Alan, KC2RFN, you got it, Alan, K2RIW.
Yeah, that's partly right. I think you, I know, I don't know, I got your question exactly. I know exactly what you're thinking. And the answer is both. You can look at it like this. The electrons are, of course, the major component here. But the nuclear forces are kind of biasing how the electrons are going to be or interacting shell to shell. And you can look at it sort of like that, that the nuclear components bias the orbital components, the electron components. Does that make sense, Dick?
Yeah, but Alan, the nuclear components are always in balance.
True, but when I'm my organic chemistry days, is it was not so much the shells themselves that were making iron so unique. It was it had to do with the number of protons, and it had to do with the nucleus of that particular atom, and so that's what set the blueprint up for the rest of the atom to do what it's doing.
Alan, is there a way that the configuration of the particles in the nucleus can affect the way the orbitals and suborbitals work, arrange themselves for the electrons? Therefore, the nucleus creates the raw ingredients that allow the electrons to move in a particular way, which will then give you the magnetic field. Is that possibly what you're saying, Alan?
It's pretty close. It's dictating which shells are going to be filled first or half-filled first, because there is a definite order that all, or almost all, I think all, the atoms follow, with the exception of iron. And of course, why would iron be different than any of the others? Because of, because its nucleus is essentially different. Again, I don't remember all the specifics. I am going to pull. I keep my organic chemistry textbook right next to my desk. I still look at it from time to time. I could sit down and review all that in a couple of afternoons and then give you a much more articulate answer. But what you just said basically echoes what I just said before. The nuclear components are biasing the electron components, and they are.
What is the difference between action of the electrons when you create a magnetic field, steady magnetic field of the magnet, and electrons when you create a current flowing through the same magnet as an electrical movement of the same electrons, and they do not interfere one with the other?
Can I cut in here just for a second, Dick?
Yeah, Alan, you seem to be an unusual guy. That is to say that when most physicians are interviewed and they're asked which of the courses during their education gave them the most amount of grief and they didn't like it very much, they usually say organic chemistry. You seem to be the guy that enjoyed organic chemistry. Once again, you might be unique. Over to you, Alan.
Wesley, I do not believe you're going to get the information you're looking for by talking on the TechNet or talking with other people. This is the kind of thing you really have to sit down with a textbook, and you have to read it and go step by step and build up a conceptual picture for yourself. And then you'll have an understanding, because I could hear the frustration in your voice. And I do not think you're going to get satisfaction from a verbal discussion on a TechNet or anywhere else. You would really need to attend the class. I would recommend chemistry, organic chemistry specifically. Pre-med organic chemistry is dead on. And you'll learn these things. I do not believe you will get it just from talking about it.
KC2QIQ.
I have a little bit different opinion because there are few people, they have a knowledge. They can simply say, well, the action of the electron when the steady magnetic field is created is this, and then electric current flowing through the same magnet at the same very time is causing this electron to react this way. And then, why these two does not interfere one with the other? You know, simple like that. At least I have a picture, but so far nobody's able to even create a picture. And then I'm being sent to the classes.
Now, this is a very difficult concept. And to some degree, some of us are the blind leading the blind. But Glenn's going to lead us out of this darkness. Go ahead, Glenn.
Well, let me tell you something. It's interesting that, you know, I work with magnetics almost every day. And, I know enough about what actually happens with iron. And, you know, its atomic number is 26. But it's just all the interesting states about it. And most of the other things that work well with iron are always other materials, like, let's say, nickel 56, which decays into iron, and most other things with it. So, most of the things, anything magnetic, usually you have something iron or one of its isotopes associated with it. But the interesting thing about isotopes and iron is that anything with 26 protons is basically iron. But you can have isotopes of iron. But the one thing interesting about iron and its isotopes is they always have not only the same number of protons, 26, but that's exactly how many electrons that they have, is 26. And there's oxidation states of minus 2 and plus 6, plus 2, plus 3, which sets up this very, very unique 3-2-2-1 configuration of energy shells. And when they're, just so happens that they're in the right crystalline structure, they can create an internal electrical short circuit just like an inductor. Most amazing thing in nature. K2RIW, KC2QIQ.
Question for Glenn Dick.
You got it, Charles.
When we take iron as the premier element that we're speaking about, and now we reduce its content, we dilute it with these other elements to make the neodymium magnet, why does that increase the ability of iron and the domains to align? I assume that's what's happening. Dick, I'll back to you.
Glenn, you got an answer for that one?
Yeah, in a very basic sense, let me try to explain this one. What's happening is that depending on the alignment of the shells of iron, you can create this current flow within the material. And basically, there's no charge or voltage on the outside, but the current is continuously flowing. Now, the alignment of each piece of iron inside there and its electron shells, if they're all aligned in a correct domain, the better that alignment, the stronger that current is going to be. Now, by adding certain materials, it makes the crystalline structure worse. If, in other words, like if you start doping to steel so that the iron lines up in that direction, yes, it'll have a magnetic field, but nowhere near as strong as pure iron itself. Now, if you add other materials inside of it, you can create the crystalline structure to make very, very unique domains so that those current flows are really, really unified and reinforced. So it's basically just reinforcing that current structure within that material so that it creates a very, very strong current flow, which in turn creates a very, very strong magnetic field.
Glenn, in the old, old days, way before your time, Mel and I used to live with what we used to think was a pretty good magnet called Alnico, aluminum, nickel, cobalt. When they called it Alnico, was that just the doping to the iron? How come they never mentioned the iron in an Alnico magnet? How are you, Glenn?
As a matter of fact, whenever you look at these composites, as I call them, iron is always one of the ingredients, Dick. And depending on how you align the iron molecule inside of, you know, the atom inside of all of these other materials, determines its magnetic strength. What's also interesting is there's other ways of doping the iron so that it will never create a sustained magnetic field. Examples, ferrite materials. When you make transformers, you don't want stored energy to be stored, right, in an EH field cycle per cycle in a transformer. You don't want it to, otherwise you'd have a BH curve that was offset. So you always want it to return back to zero again. So you can actually put materials inside there to actually prevent it from being magnetized, or you can align the crystalline structure so it accepts a beautiful one like a neodymium and a very, very strong mechanical bond that holds it all together over a wide temperature range. So it's, but yeah, ferrite is always in the equation there, Dick. I mean iron, excuse me. Iron's always in the equation.
Can I have an answer from Glenn for the question that I have asked? You have electrical current flowing through the magnet, and you have electrons movement. How does the electron know which one should support magnetism within the magnet, magnetic field, and which one should carry on the current?
Well, here again, Wesley, I'm going to give you a very, very simple answer to this one. If you take up a wire and you've got a current flow, not electron flow, current flow, then it's basically all of the electrons are interreacting with all of the atoms next to it, and it's the flow of current. Although the electrons themselves aren't flowing, the current is flowing through the wire, electrical current. You've generated if it's a DC current, you have basically an electromagnetic field at right angles to that wire. But if you can have a material where basically you have a conduit of, just because of the makeup of the chemical makeup of the magnet itself, such that a current can run within that material in a circular pattern, just like a shorted inductor, and that current just runs continuously inside there. All of the electrons, all of the material, all the mass is all in that material. The magnetic field itself is just an energy field surrounding, being caused by that reaction inside the magnet. But the field of magnetic field is just energy. There's no mass associated to it. So there's no photons or anything like that. It's just energy, Wesley. I hope that answers it. KC2 QIQ.
I believe you didn't answer my question. Movement of the electron, because of creating the short circuit, create a magnetic field. That's what I understand. And the same electrons are responsible or responsive to the difference of potential that is actually creating the movement of the electrons, migration of the pushing one to the other and whatsoever. Why these electrons do not get disturbed when they're handling the magnetic field of the magnet? When you have that field, electric field, in going through the magnet, I take the AC or DC source and I connect this to that magnet.
Because the material itself has a property. It's got this iron inside of it that has a proton of 26, and every time you have a proton with 26 protons inside its nucleus, you're always going to have 26 electrons. And the way that they're in a crystalline structure, that structure is imbalanced. It's iron. Unless the material itself changes, Wesley, that property of that mass is what it is. It doesn't change. There's nothing to break it down into some other material. So those electrons are aligned in that direction. So if you add anything additional to that field, it's just something that you're adding or subtracting. But you're not changing the material itself. It's still physically that same iron, 26 protons, 26 electrons.
You're elevating to the higher orbit the electrons when you apply the current to that. So do we then have the increased electromagnetic field, even though the structure of that atom didn't change?
I've got a guess here, Wesley. I mean, both Wesley and Glenn. See if Glenn can confirm or deny my crazy little diagram here. Assume I've got a quarter on the table and I spin it. I spin the quarter and I'm watching the quarter slowly settle down to where it's eventually going to be flat on the table. But before it goes flat on the table, it moves in a characteristic way that you and I call precessing, a little bit like a gyroscope, a little bit like a child's top. So while the quarter is precessing, if I slap the quarter with my flat hand against the table, I can force it to suddenly become aligned parallel to the table. Okay, let's assume now that I've got electrons going around an iron nucleus, and I put a strong external magnetic field, and the magnetic field is forcing those electrons to move in a particular way, similar to what my hand was doing with that precessing quarter. And then once I forced all of these electrons to move in this characteristic way where they're all lined up, the coercivity of the material takes over and they stay that way by some magic. Is that at least close to what takes place when you magnetize materials, Glenn? KC2QIQ, K2RIW?
That's precisely it, Dick. I mean, this is the million-dollar question for me that I still don't have the answer for yet. If you take this material and you assemble it and you put it together and you sit it on a bench, it sits there, no current's flowing in it. Almost like as if you had an inductor that is sitting on a bench in short circuit and nothing's happening. But until you energize it and get that domain flowing, then it stays. And it's very, very robust. And depending on the material that you have in its arrangement, in that crystalline arrangement, where that current starts flowing inside of there, it can be extremely robust. Now, I mean, eventually, can you put a polarity in an external coil field and stop it? Yeah, you can. But sometimes it takes a lot of energy to do that. It's quite amazing.
I've got an additional question here. If I took the material that's about to become a strong magnet, and I heat it up above the Curie temperature. I haven't yet made a magnet. I put it into a strong magnetic field, and then I cool it. Does that help me lock it into a better magnetic state than if I started off with a solid material and try to magnetize it and try to force all those domains to line up? If I line up the domains while they're in the fluid state, hold them with the magnetic field in the right alignment, and then cool the material, could I get a stronger magnet if I did that process? Over to you, Glenn.
I spent a lot of time, Dick, working with a lot of these people who do these kinds of, making these kinds of materials, both for transformers and magnets themselves, and they try to keep a lot of this stuff very, very close to their, you know, they don't like to let a lot of their secrets out, but, you know, some of them they've kind of shared with me, and, you know, and we're not breaking any rules here, but from what I understand, the temperature is really to create and pressure, they pressurize these things, they really slam them hard, because they found through experimentation which ones hold some of the best magnetic fields. And do they sometimes use outside electric fields to assist it in some of these magnets? Yeah, I believe that they do. I've seen these kinds of like energy circuits where, now is it that they're creating the domain, or is it that it's actually they're trying to align the material with the magnetic field? And I'm not even sure 100% that they completely know. These are kind of like techniques that they've come up to make these materials. And yes, sometimes that is part of the process, Dick. But even when it's all said and done, when it comes down to cool temperature, they still have to energize them. I've never seen one yet where they've just made the material and it was magnet when it came down to room temperature. Casey tubes, like you.
And the bottom line of this is that we know a magnetic field is there. I can set up iron filings over a piece of paper. There's all kinds of ways I can visualize the magnetic field. I can measure it with a Hall effect device. I'm talking now about a steady state magnetic field. All kinds of ways I can visualize it. But what the heck is that field itself? We got lots of words. We don't really know what it is. I wonder if we ever will. In case you are IW listening.
Yeah, I have, again, I need Glenn to answer. He didn't answer it to the point that I could understand with my ability to understand. You put the current through the magnet. You put the electrons to the higher orbit. Would that magnetic field of that magnet change or would not?
Well, keep in mind something, Wesley. It's not so much that you're putting it to a higher orbit. The orbits are, and I hate to use the word orbits, because it's not a very good representation of a good an atom model, but they're energy shells or valence shells. Those are the shells of the electron where you can basically share electrical energy from one atom to over to the next. We call it the valence, right, the valence shell. And that basically sets that cascade action from one atom to the next. It just so happens that with this iron material, the way that it's aligned and that valence shell is set up, that it starts that domino effect. So it's like you hit the first one, and then you hit the first electron, and the next electron hits the atom next to it, and depending on how they're aligned, it cascades and goes down the row, kind of a thing. So does that make more sense to you?
Saying basically that one electron from one atom is exchanging with another electron from another atom and whatsoever. But then, these electrons are responsible also for holding steady magnetic field, unless we have different electrons.
Glenn, if I've got two neodymium magnets side by side, one is magnetized and the other one I haven't magnetized it yet, but I've gone through the exact same manufacturing process on both. Is the same number of shells of those electrons filled in those two magnets, and the one that's unmagnetized, the shells are just not aligned, but the same shells are filled? Over to you, Glenn.
I'm not sure, but I'm going to give you my best answer on this one. I believe that the domain isn't established, but the electrical count is the same. Okay, because of the iron, the way that it's set up right now. So Everything is in basically neutral state or electrical balance in the one that doesn't have a magnetic field going yet. So in other words, it's proton, electron balance is just sitting there fixed. The other one has got this domain that's closed creating an electromagnetic field. Now, between the two, and this is another interesting thing about electromagnets. The amount of energy that you put into the magnet to get it going, once that reaction starts, in other words, once that current starts to flow, the energy is established. And I don't think that there's a direct relationship to energy in to that. In other words, I think that basically it's just a catalyst. In other words, you're putting a certain amount of energy in to get that reaction going. But once it's going, it actually builds on its own. So that's another interesting phenomenon that I'm not completely sure about, Dick. But I know that it doesn't take a full amount of energy. Because if you were... Because once that current is in motion, what's the work being done? There's really no work there. It's potential energy at that point. So it's a very, very complex thing, and I'm still learning this one myself. K2RIW, KC2QIQ.
One more thing. Glenn, you have a spoon, and then I'm knocking constantly your spoon. And you have a losses because you have less syrup that you could put to your mouth. Now, when the electron exchanges the place with another electron, there must be a sum of the losses. So if these electrons, even though that amount of the molecular number stays the same, it has to be some losses, some exchange, disturbance to that. And also, another factor, if electron in the short circuit could flow constantly, what is then the resistance of the structure of that magnet coming from? So I have two questions for you to answer.
Well, let's look at first at the model of a lossless inductor, an inductor that has no resistance to it. To us, it's a theoretical item. So in other words, you can model an inductor, and you start a current flow into it, and it flows forever. And there's a magnetic field associated to the outside field, and the current is always flowing. So, theoretically, the shorted inductor with a current flow inside of it flows forever. that's that model, right? Now, what's interesting is that when you look at the magnet and the current that's flowing within it, it almost completely resembles that. And if there are any losses or resistance within that magnet, it appears to be nothing. It appears to be zero because there's no voltage across the magnet. In other words, if you take a voltmeter and put it on the outside, you'll measure no voltage, but the current is flowing. So in order to have, in Ohm's law, a resistance or a loss, you have to have a current with a voltage across it. What's so unique about the magnet, Wesley, is that for the current flow, there's no measurable voltage across that material. Isn't that amazing? KC2QIQ.
So what gives you the belief that the current is that what we are actually dealing with, and also the overall resistance of 2 inches of the magnet is measurable? So you still didn't answer to me. Is there any disturbance to the spoon when somebody is knocking in it? There is a current flowing through the magnet because I made it this way. Does the magnetic field is affected because of that? Because that's the disturbance that I'm doing.
I'm sorry, Wesley. I really don't understand your question, and I'm going to have to forward this one over to Dick. Dick, do you understand what Wesley's saying? Maybe you can quantify it for me.
Yeah, I think Wesley is talking about the resistivity of the material, which is not a factor. In other words, he's got a certain number of cubic inches of material. He puts an ohm meter across it. It's almost what he's discussing. The current flow that you're talking about, I think, is current flow at the molecular level within a single atom or a single molecule. I think the electrons flying around that nucleus in a particular characteristic way, they are a charged particle, and they're moving in what looks like an orbit, if we make it very simple. I think that's the current flow you're talking about, and that kind of current flow is not something you measure with an ohm meter at the at the macroscopic level when you've got a cubic inch of the material there. Is that sort of helpful, Glenn? Over to you.
No. I was talking about me taking a 2 inches long magnet, putting the current, let's say AC, to be more complicated, into it. Let's say number of volts, whatever. Now we have the electrons responding and the electrons exchanging place one from one atom to the other. Now when they jump, they have losses because they do the extra motion in it. Now, is the magnetic field of the magnet being changed or somehow we can measure the changes of it because of the additional function that we have put into that magnet, the flow electron of, let's say, 10 volts through that magnet.
Okay, I understand the problem now, Dick. Okay, Wesley, I think I can answer your question now. Think of a magnet as a zero-volt device. In other words, there's no voltage across it. So in other words, the magnetic field that's taking place at the atomic level within that magnet is, it's just current flowing within it, and there's no voltage across it. So let's say if you put an AC voltage on the outside of the magnet, the voltage would be short-circuited by the magnet. The magnet's a short circuit, so there's no voltage across the magnet. So if you put a resistor in series with the magnet and a voltage source, what would happen is all the voltage that you're applying on the outside would be across the resistor, because the voltage across the magnet is always zero. So the current that's flowing through the magnet associated to it has really very little, if any, effect on the internal current flow within the magnet that's creating the magnetic field. Does that make more sense, Wesley? KC2QIQ.
I wonder if John has any more comments.
Do you have any comments?
Yes, Dick, I was just thinking about what you said. You brought up a very interesting point. If you had a steel bar that was in liquid form and you applied a magnetic field to it, and you could keep that magnetic field until the bar reached room temperature, I think the domain alignment would be a lot better and probably a much stronger magnet. Because if you did it while it was in liquid state and then turned it off and let it cool, the domains will be shifted due to contraction and the shifting of the element itself.
I agree with you, John. There is a person who wants to make a comment. Who was that? And give us your call letters and name, sir. K2RIW. My name is Dick. There was a person who broke in three times and said he wanted to make a comment. One more time. We're going to stand by. Is there a person who wants to make a comment? Apparently not. Yeah, both John and Dick are of the opinion that if you start molten state with a magnetic field and then cool it, I see the potential of getting a stronger magnet. Glenn is not so sure. Glenn also talked about, in the case of the materials he works with high-frequency transformers for inverter-type power supplies, there he wants, if you could get it, zero coercivity material. He wants material that has no retentivity of magnetic field. And you also talked about once you start moving the magnetic field in the materials that you like, it's a little bit like a toggle switch is the way I think you described it, Glenn. Once you reach the toggling potential, after that the material carries through very easily with very little external additional energy to increase the B and H on that particular material. That's what I think you were saying, Glenn. Over to you, Glenn, K2LIW.
Yeah, absolutely, Dick. And the part that boggles me the most about the magnets are, like you're saying, with like certain materials like steel. The best magnetism you're ever going to get out of a hunk of steel, like you could try a nail and just wrap a coil around it and put a current through that coil, and eventually you can actually magnetize a nail just by taking a coil of wire around the outside and dump a current through that coil. And you make that current field intense enough, and you'll permanently magnetize a piece of steel. But what's interesting is that if you were to heat that steel or do other things with it, is it going to make it any better? Nope. Doesn't. But if you take other materials and you mix them, like nickels and other things like that. Mainly, I think, because nickel decays, and there's other materials that also have certain properties that decay into iron, and they're raised to higher temperatures and then dropped, but being held with an electromagnetic field on them, you get much better crystalline alignment for those magnets. It's a very, very interesting area, and I wish I knew more about it, and I'm certainly looking into it more and more every day, but it's always an amazing thing.
Glenn, I think I have something good. You have the copper wire, and you put the voltage into it, and you have electromagnetic field. Now, forget about that electro part, but just the magnetic part of it. You don't have a structure to align, to have a short circuit, but you have a magnetic field. Question to you, is that magnetic field exactly having the same properties as the magnetic field of the steady neodymium magnet?
Yeah, I believe so, Wesley. The only thing about magnetic fields are that, you know, they're geometry related. In other words, like if you've got a magnetic intensity and you have a length, so in other words, generally, whatever the magnetic field strength is, and the length of in other words, like if you define it like north to south, let's say, and the intensity over that length before it starts breaking out into air, that determines where the first lines of flux start returning between the north and the south part of the material or the magnet or the wire. So the length of the intensity will change the shape of it, but the basic properties of a static magnetic field are basically the same.
Yeah, but you didn't answer. What is that you are aligning, actually, with the field, magnetic part of electromagnetic field in the copper coil that makes that magnetic part of field of flux working? What is that you are aligning? What is happening over there?
Well, simply put, Wesley, back in my earliest days of electronics that I can remember, or electricity, there was a thing called a right-hand rule. And if you were to take current in a wire, anytime there's a current flow, basically what will happen is you have a magnetic field around that current flow. Whether it's, you know, a wire, if you want to intensify it in a shorter area, you can coil the wire and put the coils of turn in, put the current through that wire, and it becomes a more intense field. But it's current and right-hand rule, so it's the current flow of electricity that creates the magnetic field. Does that make sense?
Well, I think he's asking about domains. Where are we generating domains? Is that correct, Wesley?
That is very much correct. In other words, yes, that is very much correct. That's what I'm asking for.
Okay, let me just qualify one more thing. When you're talking about a domain, are you talking about a domain within a magnet itself?
No. John, please help me.
Glenn, I was just trying to refer to the bar magnet, the domain alignment. What are we aligning in, say, a solenoid coil?
Well, in the coil or inside of the material itself? There's two different arrangements here. In other words, if you're creating a wire, it's a straight length of wire, and around that you've got the right-hand rule. If you've got a coil of wire, basically you've got right-hand rule, but multiplied by the number of turns over area, so you're creating a larger intensity into that field in a shorter, you know, geometric area. Inside the bar magnet, or a material, or a steel, when we're talking about a domain, we're basically modeling something that looks like an inductor inside that material. So we're actually defining something that looks like a current path within the material in crystalline structure that's modeling what looks like an inductor in a short circuit, so that this current flow is continuously flowing throughout this material to create what appears to be and can be measured as a magnetic field around the outside of that magnet.
Okay, Glenn, are we aligning then basically the same atomic structure in the copper wire, but it doesn't have retention, and that creates a domain inside the copper wire, let's say a single wire, not a coil. Basically, is that what's happening?
No, John, not at all. As a matter of fact, current flow, regardless of material, creates magnetic fields. Okay, so in other words, if you have anytime there's a current flow, by definition, there's always a magnetic field, whether it be copper, whether it be any material. In an electromagnetic wave, if you have, you know, that intersects a coil. So if the wave hits a coil, you're going to create from magnetic field to electrical field. So they're aligned with each other so that they're always taking place. So it's not a material reaction, it's current flow to magnetic field. Does that make more sense?
Well, then the electromagnetic wave is the conductor as well. Talking about the magnetic part of electromagnetic wave.
Totally different ballgame. Now we've got to set up a whole new set of rules. Up until this point, everything we talked about was static. We're talking about static materials, current flow in a wire, magnetic field. Now we want to talk about magnetic waves. Okay, let's start a new discussion here, and let's see what the new question is and what we want to answer.
No, because that might take a time, and we're soon going to have the repeater turned off. Maybe John would be able to, because that's what I understand. The magnet is the copper wire. It's the that has no resistance at all, and is closed circuit. That's what is the magnet. That's what is that domain. That's what is that molecular structure doing. But the copper wire does not have a retention, but it creates the magnetic field as well. Is that what you're trying to say, Glenn?
What I'm saying, Leslie, is the current flow creates the magnetic field in a right-hand plane. Every time there's a current flow, there's a right-hand plane magnetic field and steady-state current.
Yes, but Glenn, what I'm asking is, the creation of the magnetic field, is it due to the fact that the current through the wire is forcing the atomic structure of the wire to align to create that field?
No, absolutely not. It has nothing to do with the atomic structure of anything, because you could take copper, you could take aluminum, you could take any material where you could have current flowing into something, and you will always have a magnetic field at a right-hand plane around it. So it's the fact that the electron valence shells are exchanging energy in a direction that we define as current flow down a wire. So in other words, that interreaction with the polarity of that current moving there creates a magnetic field at a right-hand plane to that current flow, regardless of the material. So it's not an atomic thing, it's just literally current flow.
Okay, yes, I understand. So actually, what I feel is happening, that current flow, the motion of those electrons in that wire are creating that magnetic field around the wire. Basically, what you were saying in the bar magnet is the motion of electrons, not that they're flowing, but that motion is what's creating the magnetic field in the bar magnet.
Well, in order to create a magnetized magnet, you've got to magnetize it. In other words, you've got to bring it in the area of an extremely strong field and then get it started. As I said, if you have a magnetic material that hasn't been started, it just sits there and there's no magnetic field around it. But you influence it with a very, very large electromagnetic field in its area, and you polarize it north to south, it will hold it and maintain it.
Okay.
Yeah. You have a 10 amps flowing through the number of winds of the copper wire. And then you measure the magnetic field around that coil. Then you take the bar magnet, and you see that bar magnet, neodymium, is 3 times stronger. It's a small one, but it's 10 times stronger. Now you know that you have equivalent of 10 amps, 12 volts, flowing through the coil to have something that is 3 times weaker. But then you say, well, if it's so much current flowing through that atomic structure, molecular structure of the magnet, is there any way for me to confirm that? Because so far I can only believe what Glenn is saying, but I cannot measure it. Back to you, Glenn.
I found a website that helped a little bit. Go ahead, Glenn.
See, I guess, Wesley, what's happening is, and I know I'm I'm trying to give models and simplify everything, and I always keep on going back to the inductor, and I'm talking about the short circuit on inductor. Basically, most of us are, you know, in electrical engineering or, you know, studying, hopefully in ham radio, we always talk about the shorted inductor where the current always flows forever. So when we talk about a magnet, you know, when we talk about it, well, first of all, when we talk about an inductor, there's really no inductor that anybody knows of on the planet that doesn't have resistance in it where it, once you have a current in it, it flows forever. But what's interesting is that, you know, when we look at a bar magnet, we always use the model of that ideal inductor to explain the internal current flow inside the, you know, molecular level of the magnet. We measure the magnetic field around the outside. It's a nice, beautiful static magnetic field. It's the only other electrical equivalent that we use to describe that field. Back to the K2RIW, KC2QIQ.
KC2WGB. Yeah, the repeater went out right at the end. Okay, thank you. That's a new site. I have a whole bunch. I got about 100 from MIT, and I've got another one from Stanford. But they've been very helpful, but there's still questions out there. That might be some good information. I do the same thing. I cut and paste and send it to my printer and sort of get a little binder going. But there's a lot of good information out there. Okay, Eric, have a good evening. This is 2WGB.
Friday to Monday in a blur. It goes by so fast. So, But as everyone knows, today is Valentine's Day. And I was able to go sneak out and to get Mama, which is, I refer to the wife, XYL. I went out and got her a nice gift. I got her one of those super large boxes of those Swiffer wipes, and I think she's going to love me for it.
Swiffer. Yeah. Oh, this is great. Thanks. Got like the pair of rubber gloves or whatever, a couple of pairs of rubber gloves. That's usually romantic. Anyway, very good, excellent gift choice, by the way. Yeah, I had like Saturday night. It was niece and nephew's birthday, so celebration anyway. So. Like the adult get together now. And then on last night down Lake Ronkonkoma, and another birthday. So just a couple of parties back to back. What can I tell you? And dinner also on both occasions. Right. And it goes by like a blur. Rich, over to you. N2PPN, N2EB.
Wow, you guys bought your wife some really cool gifts. Swiffer, refills, and rubber gloves. All I got my wife was one of those pine tree air fresheners for her car. Oh, man. Now I feel like she's going to come downstairs in a few minutes and see the package wrapped up in tin foil. And she's going to feel a little bit less than, you know, all Valentine-y and stuff. Oh, man. Maybe I should, like, turn around and go home and stop at the gas station and pick up something else. Freddy?
I got that extra large box you get at Costco's. You need a hand truck to pull it out. And, you know, I didn't want to showboat it. You know, let's face it, this is not like Mother's Day or an anniversary. But I thought it was a little over the top. But you know what? Hey, what the hey? You know, after all these years, I think she deserves it. And I just went all out. Went to hell with myself. And I got a card, and I wrapped it in, I wrapped the gift in old pages of magazines. And I can't wait till she wakes up and when she sees it. I know she's just going to be waiting for me to get home tonight. John?
Oh, yeah, she'll be waiting for you to get home. Oh, yeah. Do you have any rolling pins at home or? Yeah. Do we know new Cadillac in the driveway? Like that little blurb on for Christmas where the wife goes out and goes, you know, do you think you could get away with just going to Kmart? And then she walks out at the front door and there in the driveway is a brand new Cadillac. Husband's got the keys and he hands her the keys and she goes out to the car and the car explodes. Bitch.